Reveal was born in Jerusalem, and he witnessed the wars both in 1948 and in 1967. In fact, after the 67 war, he left Jerusalem and left the Middle East and is now a U.S. citizen. He's been active with many organizations to bring justice and peace for Israelis and Palestinians.
Is a Jewish American. She's had a career in human resources management, and for the last 3 years, her passion has been Israel-Palestine. She's worked with Jewish Voice for Peace, and she is now active with other groups as well. She spent a month in the West Bank in November 2008, which included a week in Bethlehem. And actually, after that, she got into Gaza all by herself. Some of you may not realize what a remarkable achievement that is. So she spent some time in Gaza there. And finally, I'd like to introduce Saad Banura. Saad was born and raised in Bethlehem, and he is a journalist and editor-in-chief of the International Middle East Media Center. And in 1991, while participating in nonviolent protest, he was shot by undercover Israeli forces, which resulted in his paralysis. And he now lives in the U.S. So, Nabil, if you'll go first.
Good evening. Thanks for coming and listening to us and watching the movie. That's an honor. And it's an honor for me to be here to talk to you, because I remember when I was a little boy. Actually, I was 5 years old. This is the first time I start knowing about the conflict. It was at the time before the establishment of the State of Israel, was lots of Jewish terrorist groups. And they were fighting the Arabs, and they were fighting the British Mandate forces. And I was 5 years old when I was at home, and the whole building shook where we were living in huge explosion. And at that time, it was one of the Jewish organizations called Irgun, a terrorist group, was headed by Menachem Begin, who later became the Prime Minister of Israel. They bombed King David Building, the headquarters of the British government in Jerusalem. So that was my first time knowing that, you know, there is bombs and there is killing, and 5 years old. 3 years later, Israel declared its independence, and the war happened between Arab Israelis. And we used to live in West Jerusalem. So as a result of the fighting, we flee and went to live in Beer Zeit. It's a small village north of Jerusalem, about 15 miles. That's where my grandmother lived. And I saw all the refugees coming from the western part of Jerusalem and coming to the West Bank. And it was miserable to see these people. And my grandmother was a midwife, and she really delivered babies under olive trees. No operation rooms, nothing. She just had one sheet that she used around. And it was winter, and I remember the refugees coming, knocking on our door. They lived in tents, and some of them, they have babies. So they went to the villagers and knocking on their doors to stay there. After that, you know, in 67 war, again, I was there. And saw the disaster happened, another catastrophe, another problem with the war, and decided, I don't want to stay living there anymore. There is no future. On my way out from Jerusalem, Israeli army asked me to sign on a piece of paper written in Hebrew. And I didn't know what I'm signing for. But they are the power, they are the armies, they are the machine guns, and I want to go to my work, and I left Jerusalem. And it seems, you know, now to me that it looks like I signed on a piece of paper saying, although your family lived in Jerusalem for centuries, by signing this, you are losing your right to return. So, and this is true. You know, I have a U.S. citizenship. We have a property in the old city of Jerusalem. I can't go and live there. I can't visit for 3 months only. That's the limit. But anybody, any Jewish person, wherever they're born, they could go and live there. And I am out. So, and there's lots of things we've been watching in the last 40 years about the atrocities of the Israeli governments and the control of the Zionist, the control of our government and our Congress and our politicians and the lobbyists involved, regardless of the human suffering happening there. And since we were talking, you know, about Martin Luther King, there's some saying, statement that King used during his struggle in the United States, which I think this statement applies to the Palestinian now, telling the Israelis, we will match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will defeat you with our suffering. And this is what's happening to the Palestinian communities. If you, some of you follow up and see what's happening, and if you don't, just try to go there and visit and see in your eyes. Now, if you ask me, is there hope? Would there be peace between Palestinians and Israelis? I personally say yes, because I believe in the goodness of the human heart. Aeroplanes, bombs won't solve the problem. Now, why I say that? Because did we ever think that one day South Africa's apartheid would end? Have we ever, you know, think that the Berlin Wall is going to fall, or the Soviet Union will collapse? None of us ever thought of that. And I believe there'll be peace. As long as we have people like Yonatan and Sammy and Ahmed who are willing to give their lives for nonviolence. And by the way, Palestinians living daily in nonviolence methods when they are sitting on the checkpoints, when they are traveling, you know, where it takes 10 minutes in the past with this wall around. So I believe in the Palestinians. I believe they have very strong morals, which we don't hear about it in this country. And I'm proud to be a Palestinian. And I want to work and talk to people. Anybody wants to know more about Palestine, I'll be happy to talk to them about it. And it might take years or maybe many decades to fulfill peace, but one day there will be a peace. That's my belief, and I'm working towards that. Thanks for coming.
Well, I know as I watch the film, I go on a roller coaster of feelings of because that was hopeful then, and then Certainly, I hit some really lows 2 years ago when the bombing of Gaza started, and all of the deaths there, and all of the incredible cruelty, well documented, and then ignored by the rest of the world. So it is a real roller coaster, but I guess what I really wanted to say, too, is we here in the United States are the key. We're supporting this. We're ignoring, you know, the pain that our armaments, our diplomatic support, the injustice, incredible injustice. So I urge each one of you to sign up to sign up on this list, and if you don't already, get on some good lists that will tell you the truth about what's happening there and give you the opportunity to do some actions, even if it's an email petition, even if it's writing a letter, making a phone call. We've got to change this country. We've got to talk to our neighbors. We've got to stand up. And it is the key. And I'm sorry, I got really into this movie. Excuse me.
Thank you very much. My name is Saed Banoura. I'm from Bethlehem, Palestine. My family is still there. And today, January the 7th, marks Christmas in my tradition. My family is a Greek Orthodox Christian, and we celebrate Christmas on the 7th, so Merry Christmas to you all. A little bit late in this country, but there you go. So, growing up in Palestine, being born there in Bethlehem, raised in Bethlehem, studied in Bethlehem, I've witnessed lots of things, you know, things that were forced onto my life. As a child, I remember, for instance, on one of the occasions, I was in front of my parents' house. We had a small tree. I was putting, you know, Christmas decorations on the tree, very happy about it. And then I felt this, you know, that there are some people around me standing over my head. And that was way before the first intifada started. But when I looked around me, I found that there was like five or six Israeli soldiers who were standing behind me. They were just patrolling the area. I don't know for what. There was nothing there. So that was my first direct encounter with the occupation. You know, just looking behind my shoulder to see those big guns and big soldiers. Anyway, when the first intifada started, I was one of those who were really active in the intifada and in the acts of nonviolent resistance. Actually, some of those meetings between Israelis and Palestinians, ex-soldiers and Palestinians, I was, you know, I participated in several meetings like this. And they, you know, I have to say, they even had difficulties, I mean the Israelis, to come into the Palestinian territories, because that this act in their society wasn't that much welcome. So anyway, when I was 18 years old, I was shot by the undercover forces, the Israeli army. And we were having a nonviolent protest. I was attacked by the undercover forces. They tried to claim, but didn't go through. They tried to claim that I endangered their lives, but they were masked, and I thought they were Palestinians. So they shot me. One of them shot me five times in my chest, one time in my spine, one time in my left shoulder, and one bullet barely missed me in my cheek. Fell down on the ground. I was still conscious somehow. I fell face down. The soldier who shot me came and he kicked me in order to flip me over to my back and broke three of my ribs. And the last thing I heard from this man was, after all what we did and you're still alive. So that was part of it. And then the same night they took me to a military camp and then they took me to a hospital. And my mom was really terrified. Like when she heard that I was shot and the army took me, everybody thought I was gone. And one of the horrific things that caused her several health issues, including blood pressure, is that the army, the next day, they came to my place and they gave my parents my bloody clothes that I had on. So that's my story in short. I am the editor-in-chief of the International Middle East Media Center. We are a very small news agency. We write in English. We have our papers over there. Our center is part of the Alternative Tourism Group and the Palestinian Center for Rapprochement Between People. We thought that we want to create a news website that's in English and that focuses on the conflict. Of course, all websites like this face problems, either with hackers or with money, so all the time is the same. There is one thing I would like to mention about those groups. There are increasing numbers of groups of Israelis and Palestinians internationals who try to, you know, sit together and try to talk about a solution to the issue. Their voices aren't very much heard. Media here, definitely in the U.S., is I don't know. unless you go to community media, you will not know anything if you watch any of those big corporations and big news agencies in this country. In my personal opinion, as a Palestinian who was shot by the Israeli forces, and as a Palestinian Christian, and as a Palestinian who lived his life as a part of this Palestinian community, I believe that we have a bit of a hope to achieve peace, and there are lots of Palestinians who believe that we can achieve peace. The chances for peace right now don't look that good, but nothing stays the same. I mean, we've witnessed lots of ups and downs in the whole process. We have a certain combination of factors right now that are affecting the whole issue. We have, first of all, divided Gaza. Gaza is a separate small entity right now. We have a divided and separate Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. And we have one of the most extreme governments in the history of the State of Israel. We have Benjamin Netanyahu of the Likud party, who is in coalition with Israel Beiteinu, or Israel Our Home party, which is one of the most fundamentalist and extremist parties in Israel. And by the way, Avigdor Lieberman, who is now the foreign minister of Israel, and he's from the Israel Beiteinu party. First of all, he's a person who does not even know what the word peace means. I mean, he was one of the co-founders and members of the terrorist Kach organization, which is an organization, a Jewish organization that was identified by Israel itself as a terrorist group. And before becoming the foreign minister of Israel, he was appointed to be the minister of strategic affairs. And it just doesn't strike me odd, but before he was appointed as a minister of strategic affairs, he was, in every speech he gave before he became member of the government, or an effective member of the government, in every speech he gave, he said, the Arabs and the Palestinians are strategic threats, and we need to get rid of them. He suggested, he presented several plans. One of them was, let's do massive deportation of all of the Arabs who are living in Israel and all of the Palestinians and send them to the Arab countries. And this way we solve our problem and we solve the conflict. That's his vision. Right now, the situation is not that good at all. We still have home demolitions in Jerusalem, Palestinian home demolitions. We still have those plans to build thousands of units for settlers in occupied East Jerusalem. And we still have a stubborn government. But our hope is that we as people, whether we are peace activists or just ordinary people, politicians, we have the responsibility to spread the word and to tell the people, you know, it's not a Jewish-Arab conflict. We lived together before, we can live together in the future. It's a conflict with a Zionist ideology that does not want to see the other. Jews and Palestinians lived in this country, in that country, and they can live peacefully in the future. I have no doubt about that. But we need courageous leaderships who will follow what their people want and who will implement what the people want. And just one last thing. Unfortunately, while the peace process right now is totally frozen and there are some talks here and there, but there is no peace process. There haven't been a peace process for a while now because of a certain of preconditions, mainly the ongoing construction of settlements in the occupied territories. What happened on January 1st is that the Israeli army invaded the southern West Bank city of Hebron, and there was one of the Palestinians who is believed to be a member of the resistance. He was imprisoned by the security forces of President Mahmoud Abbas. And Abbas had him released after his family appealed him or something. So he had him released and had his four other friends released. And yesterday, this guy was he was nearly assassinated. The army went to his home in the southern West Bank city of Hebron it was one day after his release. The army went to his home. They were informed that he lives on the second floor. So they attacked the home at dawn, the undercover forces, went up straightforward to the second floor, broke the door, and opened their machine guns at him in order to kill him. They fired at least 30 or 40 rounds. But the issue is that the person who was sleeping in that bed is his dad. It wasn't him. So his dad's body, I've seen some pictures, and they just smashed all of his body, including his face. And they say that they wanted to kill him, or they wanted to arrest him. They broke into the door and shot the dad, even before they knew that if that was the dad or the son. So what's happening right now doesn't seem to be indicating some peace in the future, but I don't want to disappoint anybody. We believe we can reach that, but we need more popular support from the people, from you, from the churches, from civil society institutions. We need also to tell our leaders and our elected representatives in this country that don't do that in our name. Stop doing that in our name and start pushing for peace. you can start pushing for peace by first not granting Israel $3.5 billion a year in support, by stopping the weapons shipment that is going from the U.S. to Israel, and by stopping the veto power that always goes, and any attempt at the Security Council is vetoed immediately by the U.S. The people in the Middle East and in Palestine, they are very friendly and very welcome to the Americans, and because they are an educated nation, they also know that ordinary Americans aren't to be blamed for what their government is doing. So I urge you to urge your government to change its policy.
Thank you. And our first question is for Anna. Anna, could you please share something about your experience in Gaza while you were there?
I have, for the last about 2 years, have been sponsoring a deaf child in the At Faluna School for the Deaf in Gaza. And I decided I really wanted to go to Gaza. So wanted to see her. I wanted to see what was happening there. I wanted to talk with people as best I could and see how their lives were going now, 2 years after the horrible, you know, attacks and bombing. So this October, I was able to, well, I went to Cairo, and I had done some homework ahead of time of what it took to get into Gaza, and I was lucky on a couple of points, and I did get a person in the Egyptian Foreign Ministry to pay a little attention, and he did get me a permit, he said. He said I was on the list to get in. So off I went, and I got to the border by bus and by taxi, and then was turned away because they were saying no American passport people can get in. But fortunately, he was still in his office late in the afternoon, and he did talk to them, and I did get in. So it was by luck. So I was able to, I stayed for 5 days just about, and was able to, I just walked around, I talked to people as best I could, and it was very, very interesting to see how determined they are to be, to rebuild. They're breaking up concrete by hand. They're sifting it. There's cement coming in through the tunnels, never enough. There is some rebar coming in. They're straightening rebar. You know, they're working amazingly to rebuild and to have a life. But there's no paid work, hardly. I mean, 80% unemployment. So it was really, really interesting, though, to talk to people. How are their lives now? And I did get to meet my deaf girl, and the school was very generous with their time to take me around to see various various areas of the bombing and how they are now. But I left just very, very impressed with their resilience, their determination, and things are better than under Hamas than it was before. But of course, there's tremendous resistance too to Hamas's extremism, religious extremists of any stripe are not my favorite people or government. So.
So here's the next question for whoever wants to take it. How many communities like the ghetto we saw in the movie, and I assume they mean the camps, how many camps like that are there in Palestine?
Anybody know that one?
Or maybe how many people live in camps, too?
Refugee camps in general?
Yeah.
Well, what's happening right now is, for example, Gaza, which has a majority of refugees, is a biggest refugee camp on earth. So Gaza itself, all of it, is now a refugee camp under siege since so many years. And we have hundreds of patients who died, including a patient who died on January 1st. Although he received eventually his permit to receive treatment out of Gaza, but he died. So this is one. And if you go to the West Bank, we have refugee camps, dozens of them, like in Bethlehem area, we also have like Al-Azza, Dohisha, and, well, yes, so it's like Aida. So every Palestinian territory or district has several refugee camps, sometimes 4, 5, 10, depending on the how big the area is. The Palestinians in general became a society of refugees, some of them internally displaced, who were living in what became the State of Israel, and some of them are externally displaced in Jordan, Syria, and other parts of the world. My mom actually comes from Haifa, but she can't go back there. And they don't have their home anymore. And so, although as far as the UN is concerned, I'm not a refugee, my mom is.
In the movie, the young Muslim man said, "Look at the elections." Now, if citizens on both sides continue to vote for supporters of violence, meaning Netanyahu and Hamas, how can political change occur? Nabil, you want to take that one?
It will change. You know, I guess I heard things saying, people will lead and leaders will follow. And it's hard. It's hard. You know, you will be accused, like myself here, even living in the United States in the Bay Area. Some of my Arab friends, they think I'm too easy to make help, you know, friendships with Jewish people. It's very hard. It takes lots of work. It takes determination. It's very disappointing, you know. Every day you wake up and you don't know what's going on in the Middle East. But I believe, to me, it's something spiritual. I think this is something come from the soul, you know. This is the seek for peace and to fight, you know, you want to call it evil. It's spiritual. And to me, the strength of the soul, of the spirit, is more powerful than machine guns. They will succeed. But we have to believe in that. And this is like Sami and Gandhi and Dr. King believed in. And it takes a while. It takes, you know, effort and energy. One thing is, like, to me, everybody says this conflict, recent conflict, 60 years. But when you measure any community or any nation, you don't say this, you know, this nation is 5, 6 years old. You say this is 4, 5 centuries old. So the Middle East peace might happen, you know, and maybe I give it 50 years. It's not going to happen tomorrow. There'll be lots of bloodshed, you know, until we get to that point. And we shouldn't give up. This is my idea, is don't give up. Don't give up.
Yeah. It's just a fast addition. Hamas in Gaza, although I don't support their ideology and policy, they were the only Palestinian faction who went to the public and said, Israel, we offer you 10-year truce. They did. They offered a 10-year truce, and they said, during this period, nobody will fire anything at you. The same night, and that was in 2002, The same night following the meeting between all of the Hamas leaders and several leaders of other factions, they agreed on to offer Israel a 10-year hudna, or truce, not a peace deal or negotiations, just truce, calm. The same night, after the meeting was done, the Israeli Air Force bombarded the house of Salah Shehada, who is a Hamas leader, one of the leaders who had this meeting and decided to offer a 10-year truce. 13 members of his family were killed at that night, and that offer was voided the same night.
This also refers to the movie. It says, could you tell us why Mubarak was deported and what he is doing now?
Anybody? Go ahead.
Sami's uncle.
Oh, Sami's uncle. I really have no idea. I know Sami, but...
Yeah, I think he's still working, you know, on peace. Yeah?
Good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Because I didn't know. I just know Sami. Yeah.
But basically, he was deported from Israel for promoting nonviolent resistance. That was considered a threat. Okay. I don't know. Maybe Anna wants to take this. I don't know. It says, "What has happened to the Israeli peace movement? Moribund?"
Moribund. It's sort of like murdered, actually, more than moribund. They are under tremendous pressure and attack. But there are still people who will cross what they're... I was surprised when I was there that Israelis are not allowed to go into the West Bank. I mean, they can be arrested... just for going in, even though, you know, they can drive on the Israeli-only roads into the settlements. If they veer off, they're liable for arrest. And so they do go in still. There are groups and many individuals who are there and doing things day to day. But again, the statistics that I saw when the bombing of Gaza came, where, like, what was it, 85% of the Israeli population approved of this massive horror there and murder. It is very discouraging. So I know the Jewish groups here who are for peace do try to support those Jewish peace groups in Israel. And they need support. They need to know, too. I mean, they're, like we're all saying, they look to the U.S. They look to the U.S. Jewish community. They look to the U.S. Population in general. So whatever we can do to support and find out what they're doing. And actually, there's groups that do come through. We've got one coming through, Anarchists Against the Wall, that for years have gone out and... put their lives on the line and have been injured and arrested to support the nonviolent demonstrations, especially in Beilin and Nailin, that have really been hammered. So they're coming this month. So do support whatever you can.
You know, I'd like to add something. Today the Knesset, approved some of their regulations about... they will institute an investigation for the left-wing activists who are calling for peace, for those who are calling for divestment and boycott of Israeli products, Israeli themselves, that they will be investigated, where they're getting their funding and what's their loyalty is. So things are getting, you know, I hate to say it, Israel is becoming more of a fascist country, you know, in the racist country with the regulations they pass. And, you know, it's not good for, you know, Israel in general, what they're doing, you know. And actually, I see that's why there's no peace, there is no way to go of what's happening in Israel itself. You know, there might... I think one thing that might happen is the Israel society or the whole system that the Zionist established there will destroy itself from within.
We hope.
Inshallah. Here's a question that's actually not a question but a suggestion, but I agree with the suggestion, so I just want to share it with the audience. Do you believe it might help clarify the imbalance of power between Israel and the Palestinians for Americans especially to add the adjective colonial to the word settlement? Because we all of us are accustomed to hearing about settlements in the news, but settlements is such a benign-sounding word. It sounds so settled. So maybe if we add the word colonial in front of it whenever we're talking about the illegal buildings that are happening on Palestinian land, that might help. Okay, so that's just a little suggestion. And here is... this question is sort of the $64 million question. In the U.S., we are used to distinguishing between church and state. So a criticism of our government isn't seen as a renunciation of a whole people. But perhaps because of the Holocaust, it appears that some Jews... feel that criticism of the actions of Israel is seen as anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic. So how can dialogue between us be improved? And how can we criticize the action of our U.S. government and Israel without this misunderstanding? Mm-hmm. Right? That's the big one. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'd like to give the speakers a few minutes to mull that one over. And you know how there was absolutely no admission charge tonight? Okay? There is still no admission charge at all. But we have to pass the basket, I feel. And I'm asking you, just think, you enjoyed the movie, it was worthwhile. How much is it worth to you to see a movie? Please consider donating that to the Middle East Children's Alliance. They have a very wonderful, worthwhile program. They did a poll of everybody, a lot of school children in Gaza that suffered the horrible bombing 2 years ago, and asked the children, what would you like? What would make your life better right now? And they said, we would like to have drinkable water while we're at school. Because the truth is that the bombing of Gaza 2 years ago took out all the sewage treatment plants and things like that, in addition to lots of other stuff. So Margaret and Pat are coming around right now with baskets, and if you wouldn't mind digging in your pocket, and checks would be wonderful. You just make them out to Mecca, M-E-C-A. Thanks. And as we're collecting money, why don't you guys go ahead and talk about where to go from here? Maybe that ought to be the last question. We'll just wrap it up.
Okay, yeah, you thanks. Know, I would say money is everything in this country. The Israel lobby controls who goes in Congress and what happens in the White House. This is the fact. It has nothing about democracy or human rights, or all this is nonsense. It's money. Our representatives, they want to get reelected. They want to stay in position of power. And the Israel lobby knows that, and they have multi-million dollars budgets. If you are against Israel or you vote anything against Israel, they'll cut the money and you will lose your position. So this is the evil, you know, it's happening here in Washington, D.C. And what gives the our representatives to do that is when they look what is people are more interested in, probably health care, domestic issues. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about a bunch of Palestinians or Israelis in the Middle East. So the representative can vote wherever the lobby tells them to vote, and their constituents, they don't care. They don't understand what's going on. So this relationship between our representatives and the Israeli lobby is so strong and so powerful that the money that they pay for these representatives, that, you know, they vote their way. So colonialism and all this is an issue. Everybody knows about it. It's a political issue. Now, even the creation of the State of Israel was really to help fight anti-Semitism and all the problems that they were facing in Europe. Now, Israel becoming, it's hijacked all the, really the Zionist enterprise from the beginning to help the Jews. Now they're becoming an enterprise. Control and selling arms, and it lost the meaning, you know. It doesn't help the Jews anymore. And there's lots of Jews around saying, hey, you know, don't speak in my name, you know. I don't want you. You don't represent me.
Well, we still have the vote. And money talks, obviously, and money buys ads and it buys repetitious lies. So, but we still have the vote. So let's pay attention to that. And also, don't be silenced by this thing of, oh, anti-Semitism, or, oh, you're against the Jews or something. Because one of my big frustrations is that Israel and the Zionists have conflated this, you know, Israel is Judaism or something, you know, and it isn't, believe me, because, and what I tell my Jewish friends too when I need to is, you know, they live in this country, you know, there's Jews in this country, and it's primarily Christian. Okay, do they want to, you know, have this called the Christian country and them be, you know, marginalized and even planned evictions, you know, from the country. So, you know, this whole thing of conflating Israel with, you know, is Judaism is clever for their purposes. But don't let it silence you, and don't let it confuse you, because it is a manipulation.
Just have three main points that were raised here, and I want to comment on them really fast. First of all, yes, settlements. When I'm being politically polite, I would call them settlements. But settlements are colonies. Settlements under international law are illegal. And under the Fourth Geneva Convention, which Israel is a signatory to, they are illegal. Settlements are defined as illegal, and they violate the international law, and they constitute war crimes. Now, we have an administration in the White House that's offering Israel one of the biggest deals ever just for 3 months of freeze of settlement activities. If we, and that deal includes fighter jets, hundreds of millions of dollars, weapons, and that's for 3 months freeze. If there is a real government that, you know, cares about international law and about justice, they would tell them, no, you will not build more settlements in the occupied territories, and you're not going to get any money anyway. Because you can't keep supporting the occupation and giving them all of this power and money to kill other nations and to occupy their lands. That's the the last thing is what's happening right now with this new Israeli government. We know that when the Oslo talks started, when the Oslo first Oslo agreement was signed in
1993.
Yeah. In 1993, there was a condition by Israel that the Palestinian Liberation Organization, headed at that time by Yasser Arafat, recognizes Israel's right to exist. They did so. The Palestinian Liberation Organization, most of the Palestinian factions, they recognized Israel's right to exist, and then the peace process tried to advance. Of course, settlements were always the main reason that they collapsed. In the 90s too, so like every time, like when they started with the Gush Etzion and with Ma'al Adumim and all of the expansions. The most dangerous thing right now is not an Israeli demand for the Palestinians to recognize Israel. The dangerous issue right now is a demand that the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Because they already recognize Israel, but Israel is now demanding that we recognize Israel as a Jewish state.
Democratic, Jewish and democratic.
Yeah. Exactly, I don't know. But how do you want that to happen? We already recognize the state of Israel. Now you wanted a democratic state, and now, as he said, you want us to be expelled from the whole country because it's a Jewish state that defines itself as a Jewish state, not a state for all of its citizens. So that aspect is really, really dangerous, and nobody should succumb to that. It's unacceptable, with all due respect to the faiths, but we are talking about politics. Unacceptable. Me, personally, I do not accept to live under a Jewish state, Islamic state, or Christian state in this regard. I believe in living under a democratic state that treats all of its citizens as equal, and religion is a personal choice or faith of the citizens of this state. Thank you.
I just want to add one little thing about the Christians in the Middle East. We're listening to the news, what's happening in Egypt, where the Muslims are attacking Christians in there, Iraq. Palestinians in 1948 represented 22% of the population in Palestine. Now they represent 2% of Palestine. The population. So Christianity is disappearing from the Middle East. Palestine, where Jesus was born and died, is going to be a country controlled by Muslims who believe he's only a prophet, or by Jews who even don't believe in Jesus. And to some extent, I believe the West, Europe and the United States, are responsible for that, for allow for this to happen while they are sitting and watching this.
Okay. Thank you so much to our three speakers. Yes. Let's give them all a big hand. To Nabil, Anna, and Syed. I have a couple of quick announcements for you. One is, I have exactly one copy of Little Town of Bethlehem that's for sale. Is Charlie here? Is it? What's the price? $20? Okay. And also, Steve Greaves, who's already left, would like to offer for sale this book by Mitri Raheb, Bethlehem Besieged, Stories of Hope in Times of Trouble. And it's signed by the author, and he would like to sell the book for $20 and give the money to Mecca. So if there's any takers on that. Also, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but there's someone over here who is organizing a global exchange trip to the Holy Land. So actually, I was just going to say, after we finish up here, go and see her if you want, if you're interested in getting in on that trip. So, on that note,
Emily, yes. I don't know, you want to ask John, maybe you want to make an announcement about the Sabil trip?
Is the Sabil trip booked?
Essentially,
yeah. Nobody can hear you, huh?
Friends of Sabil, which is an organization of Palestine Christians and supported in this country by Friends of Sabil, is taking a trip to Palestine, Israel in February for the International Conference in Bethlehem. and for a tour, 10-day tour of Palestine before and after. We're essentially full, but if anybody's really interested, come and see me.
Okay, so on that note, I just want to paraphrase Wes Nisker. Remember how he used to say, we don't really like the news we're hearing, so let's go out there and make some of our own. Good night, everybody.